Run for cover. This is Radioactive Sports with superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson.
I take pride in my hair.
Feel that? Radioactive Sports in the afternoon on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
Still kind of in shock a little bit, and, you know, I'm sure it'll settle in maybe a little later, but it was really cool to share that experience with my family. They haven't been there for any of the couple times that I've won, so to be at this one, it was special.
Are you ready to put on a green jacket?
I'm ready.
It's that time. Billy?
Bubba, would you please do the honor presenting Jordan his green jacket?
Thank you.
Maybe.
A little sweaty.
There it is.
Jordan, congratulations.
Thank you,
we're
Mr.
very
Chairman.
Proud of you.
Thank you very much.
What was I doing at 21? I'll tell you right now, I had a green jacket, though. I know I had one in my closet somewhere, so I probably was, I could say I did as much as he did right there. I had a green jacket.
No, you didn't.
I had a green jacket.
No,
I know
no,
I had
no,
to have
no.
had it. It was like, well, it was a windbreaker.
No, you didn't.
He was pretty good. That kid, I don't know how much of it you watched, but I watched the last two rounds.
Yep. Last two rounds, Saturday and Sunday?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched the whole thing.
Nothing else going on in your life?
Nothing.
Going on?
Nothing at all. I like to just watch golf. That's what I do for a living.
I did all day on Sunday, went out on the course myself, hit some balls. Now I've suffered from a Joe Mauer type injury.
You have an oblique now.
I have a strained oblique.
Do you really?
No. No, I don't, but it feels like I probably do. I feel a little sore over here in this area.
I'm sure you do. I mean, the first time to work those.
I was whacking them.
Well, yeah, and it just goes to show you, in different sports, you use so many different kinds of muscles, too. I mean, you've been lifting weights.
I've been working out like crazy and working my obliques.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Honest to God,
yeah.
I've been working obliques knowing that I don't want to be a Joe Mauer type guy, a pansy, when it comes to swinging a baseball bat.
Do you have anything lateral?
Lateral.
Like lateral, like a lateral, like a sports-related hernia, or just what was he called? He called it the bilateral leg weakness.
Yeah,
I like that one too.
I don't have any bilateral. Leg
you didn't
weakness.
Have any bilateral leg weakness. Okay.
No, but remember growing up, maybe you did the same thing. But watching football games, and then you want to go out back and play football. Well, that's kind of what was happening to me yesterday. As I was back and forth watching golf, moving all the outdoor patio furniture out on the deck, and moving the grill out of the garage into
nice
the deck.
Day.
Making it beautiful, you know, hoping it's not going to snow, even though snow is in the forecast on Tuesday.
So?
Next Tuesday.
Yeah.
Next Tuesday.
But 60s all the way up until that. That's nice.
So then I had to go out to the golf course. We'll talk to George Shulls coming up, our PGA master of instruction. He instructs over at the University of Minnesota. I live just a couple blocks off, and I had to go out and whack some balls.
Wow. Did George help you?
Can find
they say he's very good.
Yeah, he's amazing. That's
he's amazing, and he knows everything about everything. Man, that kid, the way he swings at the golf ball, he makes it look so simple.
Spieth? Mm-hmm. Jordan Spieth.
Jordan Spieth is just unbelievable, man.
How about that, though? What is it, the last four tournaments he's played in, second, first?
And the eight rounds that he's played at the Masters last year and this year, he's been in the top five for each of those rounds.
He broke a record yesterday, didn't he, 19 under?
No, he went 18 under. He was at 19 under. He had it at 19, and he missed his last putt on the 18th and went back to 18 under. He bogeyed the last hole yesterday.
But it wasn't when he was 19 under. Wasn't that the farthest under anybody's ever been at the Masters at Augusta?
It was.
At 21 years old.
It was first time.
How about this?
He finished the last round, third round, I'm sorry, at 17 under. And he went, I mean, he had several birdies. We know that for sure because he went like 27, 28 birdies total for the entire tournament. But he had a lot of bogeys in there, too, and he still made it to 19 under at one point.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
We'll talk to Greg Shulls coming up here in just a couple of seconds. There was how about Jim Nance licking basically the TV screen over Jordan Spieth saying he's the next Tiger Woods and is the greatest golfer that America's ever seen since Tiger Woods? And just give it up, man. I mean, it almost took away from the championship-type golf that Jordan was playing. Because, like, dude, just let his play do the, instead of licking, I mean, just licking. You could hear that.
But I hate the fact that they brought Tiger's name into it at all. Let it be his moment only, and don't compare him to anyone else. He's a 21-year-old kid who's found a way to get this good, this quick, starting golf lessons, I think, pretty seriously at the age of 12, it said, sometime during that last round. And so he's got essentially, I mean, give or take, about 9 years or so, where he's actually played the game of golf seriously, two of those years have been Masters. He played two Masters already.
Did you notice that whoever the color guy was with Jim Nantz, I can't remember the other guy.
Nick Faldo,
Is that who it was? But when Tiger Woods had the wrist problem, and then after his round said, well, I had to pop a bone back into place, and as they were wrapping up coverage, it must have been Nick Faldo who said, if that really did happen, like people not believing Tiger Woods.
I just asked my good friend and chiropractor and golf enthusiast, Chad Renwick, who you know, if that was possible, because I did hear that. He said there's no way that that was possible.
Yeah.
He saw the shot, and he knew that Tiger had really hurt himself because of the reverberation through that entire thing up to his shoulder. It had to have hurt. I think it did, too. But to say that you popped it back in.
Tiger Woods is just a massive liar.
He's just a big puss is what he is. He's a puss.
It's ridiculous.
And walking up the fairway after he hit that shot, he's walking up the fairway like the biggest Sally on the face
of the earth.
I mean, to carry a wrist the way he was and pretending like it looked like a football player who had lost his, blown a shoulder out, like separated a shoulder. Mm-hmm. And Doofus finishes the whole round. He fires pretty good golf. I'll give him credit, but
surprised.
That was stupid that he would come up and
he
say
is very stupid.
I popped it back in. Shut up.
Yeah, he is a douche. We'll talk to Greg Schultz coming up here. PGA Master Professional of Instruction. He teaches golf over at the University of Minnesota. But yeah, just a crazy day of sport yesterday in the Twins, not very good either. Chris Sale, they got mowed down by the White Sox, ending up 1-5 on their first road trip. It's not very good at all. But how about those Minnesota Wild? In the playoffs, not playing the Anaheim Ducks. We're at it with the St. Louis Blues starting on Thursday.
Yeah. Yep. What'd that do for you? How about the last game against the Blues, by the way? Well, I mean, 4-2, right?
Yeah, nobody was playing any starters, really. It wasn't really a
game. I like it better than Anaheim. I don't care.
Absolutely. Bleacher Report has us winning in 7.
Yeah.
Vegas has us at 10-1 odds to win the whole shebang.
10-1. That's pretty good.
Pretty exciting.
Where this team was at All-Star break, for Vegas to put us at 10-1, and we all know about Vegas, how good they are at figuring the odds. They can do it 9 times out of 10. They're pretty doggone accurate on any sport, any level.
We'll talk to a sweetie, our arch nemesis, Elizabeth Meineke. She's the beat reporter for the Blues, the Rams, Mizzou football, Fox Sports Midwest coming up at 5:30. Get a little sneak preview as to what they're thinking about our Minnesota Wild, and probably give her some smack talk, too.
Oh, yeah, throw down some smack.
Yeah.
Even though it's the state I played my college football in. Oh, well, yeah, it's time for some smack. I played for the Chiefs. I played for the St. Louis Cardinals. I played for the Northeast Missouri State Bulldogs.
Wow.
I had all parts of that state covered. But I'll be darned if the St. Louis Blues. I'm going to have to talk a little trash on that one.
St. Louis Blues, everybody.
They're good.
2-1-1 on the season against the Minnesota Wild. Beat them in St. Louis for the first time this year since 2007.
I think we have a pretty good chance. I think we overcame quite a bit this season by going down there and finally winning one, which gives me a better feeling about it. And the simple fact that we are a very good team on the road.
Well,
I like that, knowing that going into the playoffs.
No, the good thing is just looking back to some of the things that we talked about, potential playoff matchups. Since Ken Hitchcock became the Blues coach, St. Louis has suffered early exits despite home ice advantage all 3 seasons. Chief among the Blues' problems is goaltending, where neither Brian Elliott nor Jake Allen is instilling much confidence. So if we can score some goals, outside of the 2 recent games, one that St. Louis controlled but lost, the Blues have dominated the Wild back to 2007. The Wild win in St. Louis 2 weeks ago was the first time in regulation in 8 years the Blues play a physical game that the Wild haven't been able to match. St. Louis penalty kill and power play ranking both among the top 10 in the NHL.
So you gotta like the way this thing sort of turned around. Some of the players that we got back from injury, some of the different combinations we can use now that they're back. So I mean, if you win in 7, do you have an awful lot left in the tank by playing a really physical St. Louis Blues squad, and then who then? Anaheim? I mean, that'd be a nice 1-2 punch.
No, that'll be the winner of the Chicago-Nashville series, both of which we've shown success against this year.
I like our chances to maybe even be better than last year.
I feel like I'm more worried this year because I feel like the Colorado Avalanche last year were a beatable team. The St. Louis Blues, though, since 2007, it's been a long struggle. They're just bigger than we are. But if we can run circles around them and score goals on their questionable goaltending, then yeah, we're in. And I think that's key.
And then we get the winner of, you said Nashville and whom?
Chicago.
I think we can get past the Blues. To get to where I want to go. And I honestly believe that we can get past either of the two teams that on the second level.
Yeah, me too.
So we have to get past the Blues. That might not be easy.
Me too.
But we dug ourselves a big fat hole.
We came out of it. Single-digit losses since the All-Star game, since trading for the Dubinator. Thursday game, Saturday game, those are in St. Louis. Then Monday and Wednesday of next week, you and I will be at Tom Reed's Hockey City Pub for the home games.
Jeez.
Games 3 and 4. We'll be down there right in the thick of things. So come on down and say hi at Tom Reed's. Have some, what do they call that stuff that I like to eat?
The puck dogs are what I go for.
The poutine. I like me some poutine.
Yeah, the poutine.
Poontang. Poutine.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Tastes similar. No, it doesn't. It tastes like heavenly.
I like hamburgers.
Heavenly hors d'oeuvres.
The one pound hamburger is pretty good hamburger. It's too little, though. Just a pound. I don't know what to say. I do know that that kid was pretty good yesterday, though. I will say that. I can't get that off my mind. I grilled all weekend and watched that kid play golf.
You grilled too? So did I.
Yeah, I did a lot of grilling.
I had fat ribeyes. And
I threw a big fat ribeye, two of them on, and then yesterday a bunch of cod. I threw some cod down.
Cod. You trying to look like The Rock?
He's eating a ton of that. I normally get orange roughy, and I found out from my butcher today that you can't get orange roughy anymore.
The heck is orange roughy?
That's a fish. Used to be. It's endangered right now, so I don't even know if it's in existence anymore, but I couldn't buy my orange roughy. Is that true? Somebody call me.
You ever watch
if that's
show?
True or not, I've been told it's that they're dead meat.
You ever watch that show, Wicked Tuna?
I have.
Oh, my God. That was like a marathon all weekend. I want to get out there.
That is good, isn't it?
I want to get out there.
Oh, my God. When they get one of the big ones, what do they call the big ones? When you land up, they have a name, a nickname for one of the big fish.
Yeah.
Might be like what they call me, Fatty.
Fatty.
I think it's a fatty. You get about 800-900 pounds of tuna on the end of that thing.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
I love it.
Greg Schultz, do we want to call him right now?
No, not call him. He's outside.
He's on?
He's outside. He's right outside the door. We have a lot to talk about.
Well, then, for God's sakes, it says call him right here.
No,
I don't know what you meant by
stop
that.
Stop it.
Well, you stop it.
4.5 questions at 4:30. Adrian Peterson's in town over the weekend. I texted you about what was happening. A friend of a friend of a friend saw him, hung out with him, went home with him. She's a woman. And his wife was nowhere to be found. Does it matter what AP does with his free time? We'll talk about that coming up at 4:45, our annual check-in with Jim Rich. He's at Target Field today. He thinks he's a big shot.
He does think he's a big-timer.
Elizabeth Meineke, the beat reporter for the Blues. Talk to her at 5:30.
Talk with her a little this, a little that.
Have tickets.
Let's talk a little Mizzou football maybe, too.
Maybe. We also have tickets to see one of the world's greatest blues guitarists, Joe Bonamassa. The Orpheum Theater. We'll give that away at 5:42. Brandon Warren talking about the state of the Twins.
He grades them.
Yep. Twins opening day trivia at 6:12. Winner will get a pair of tickets to go see the Twins take on the Kansas City Royals Thursday at Target Field.
I get to be a lifeline,
you
right?
You are a lifeline. 6:34, we'll talk about how the Twins play today, and then we'll wrap things up and we'll go home.
That's how we're going to do this thing, start to finish right there, what you just heard. So come on back. It's Radioactive Sports.
Just a bone kind of popped out, and the joint kind of, went out of place, but I put it back in.
Sure you did.
Yeah.
Radioactive Sports, superstar Mike Morris, Ben Holson.
Why are we talking like this?
Because it's a matter of just trying to concentrate, stay focused, and have a chance to hit the ball out of the second cut.
Oh,
off the apron, maybe it's a bump and run.
You got to do golf clap, and you got to know how to talk the right talk.
Absolutely.
Golf talk and golf.
No question.
Not a whisper talk.
Not a whisper.
As we were leading up to the Masters, going through the power rankings and running down the standings and whatnots Thursday and Friday, we were talking like this, but I think we can talk more.
Oh, yeah, it's a joyous occasion now.
Greg Schultz in with us.
Thank you, guys. Nice to be here.
And he's a PGA Master Professional of Instruction.
Correct.
And we just had a tiny, tiny sliver of that going on during the break. Trying to correct a doggone push. Looked at me like a bit of a slice.
It's not so much of a slice.
Man, a power fade. We'll call it a power fade. Yeah,
it just kind of goes, if I'm going straight, it's just going to go right. Straight what, right. But
how
it's not
how
slice.
Many yards, Ben, does it take to go from the word fade to the word slice in your mind? You know, no one's ever defined that, by the way. Is it 6 yards? Right. Is it 4? Is it 20?
Yeah, but isn't a slice when it curves around to the right? Mine's just going straight right.
A push. Yeah, a pusher. And
so I was,
slice,
was at your golf course yesterday. I was hoping to see you because I was need a little instruction.
Yeah.
But luckily
gonna,
got
if
it.
You're going to, don't look for me usually on Masters Sunday out at work.
I mean,
if there's like one or two days, I'm going to, wrong day. To be out there.
But as I was watching the Masters, I was telling the superstar Mike Morris, just like watching football games growing up, I wanted to go outside. As I'm watching it, and it's finishing up, it's done, still sunlight. I'm like, I want to go out there and play now.
Oh, I did that too, but I live in White Bear, so I stayed close to home, and I went to a neighboring golf course and just chipped and putted for a while. Yeah, it's like that. When I was a kid playing basketball, as soon as the game was over, I went and shot back.
Yeah,
you get that urge.
It's that time of year. It's a seasonal thing. How many kids do you see outside shooting on their outside on their driveways?
Oh, yeah.
Just the hoops everywhere to get lit up when the, when the tournament's going on. So in
absolutely.
March, incredible what happened yesterday.
Yeah.
The kid, as I call him, Jordan Spieth. Let's get his name right. Spieth or Spieth?
It's Spieth.
He had it at 19 under, and
he
the
did.
Last putt he just. let's face it. If you're 21, it's the Masters, and you need to make the last putt. You may not make it.
Right.
It's a good thing that he had three or four chances to make it.
Yeah,
his
first one ever to get to 19 under at any point during the Masters and its history. But 18 is tying the record with Tiger Woods, and so I don't think he cared at that point. He knew he was going to make history, and his family is right over there. I mean, he's got a special needs sister that couldn't make the trip back at home, so I'm sure he kind of dedicated it to her. And what a great victory! And I was telling Bennett before he came on that I really think this is a big point, and there's been a lot of major kind of points in American golf and maybe in the history of golf in our lifetime, maybe. Obviously, Tiger Woods coming onto the scene is the biggest that of my lifetime, I think. But this could be a big one. This could be not just because an American won the Masters, but, you know, an Englishman has finished in second in Rory from Ireland and then Hideki Matsuyama. You know, I mean, when you have that global, you know, bits and pieces from all over the globe playing great in a tournament like the Masters, the global game is growing.
Yeah, but I still think that a lot of the attention, obviously Jordan played an unbelievable game yesterday and all weekend, but a lot of it is still about Tiger Woods. And when I played that clip about him popping a bone out and then popping it back in, you laugh just like you laugh right now.
I do.
Why the laugh?
Again, I mean, why can't we let Jordan just enjoy this without being compared to anybody else right now? I mean, it's unfair to compare anybody to Tiger. It's the, you know, LeBron Jordan thing all over again. I mean, at what point are we going to say, you know, let's just let the guy live out his own legacy and create his own legacy. Why should he have to be compared to anybody? You know, and he just play the game and enjoy it. And, you know, he's a multimillionaire at 21. I mean, how bad can life be? Who cares if you're compared to Tiger Woods when you're 21 and just and just cash a check for $1.8 million, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty
and
nice.
And the endorsements and everything else.
Oh, yeah.
Just being 21 and who you are at that point, just from winning a Masters and a green blazer, that puts you on the map for a long time.
Yeah, it's in the history books forever, and you know, and he also you know represents the game. He doesn't, you know, unlike that other guy we just talked about, there is no background of where they had to bleep anything out during an actual live telecast.
Wow,
we don't have the club throwing. Rory had a little club throwing a couple weeks ago. I don't know if we'll ever see that out of Jordan. He'll yell at himself a little bit.
He talks to the ball a lot. Yeah,
and he talks to the ball and he'll kind of say, come on, Jordan, what are you doing? But that's what we all do. I mean, all of us in golf, we talk to the ourselves and the golf gods and the golf ball a lot.
For sure.
He was always about just an ounce more right or just an ounce more to the left. He was talking to it in ounces.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, the expectation at that level is unbelievable, you know. So, I mean, you want perfection, you don't expect it, like in any sport.
What do you think of his swing? I mean, he's doing it his way. There's no reason to compare him to the other.
Right.
When you swing the way he does, he's very controlled and very methodical, and he hits a lot of fairways and greens and regulation.
Yeah, he doesn't try to overpower any golf course. He's not going to be ever on the long drive list, I don't think. He'll never be in any of those kinds of. But he does kind of, and when he leaves it to the right, I mean, four right, a number of times, and I think that's just. you know, kind of trying to guide the ball a little bit. Right-handers that try to guide the ball too much and kind of steer it a little bit too much will have a tendency to lose it to the right, and left-handers vice versa. So if I was to be his coach, Cameron is the name of his coach that I've met, and down in Atlanta, and, or I mean down in Dallas, I mean, and, you know, I would just have him over time just try to loosen up just a little bit with the swing. He tries to control it just a little bit too much for me, but unlike an exact antithesis would be Bubba Watson, who's just going to wail at it and
love that guy
and go and find it. You love Bubba?
God, I love that guy. Specifically because his name's Bubba, but he's also crazy. I'm talking to Greg Schultz, PGA Master Professional of Instruction. He's also co-host of Tee It Up Golf here on 105 The Ticket. Tiger Woods, you talked about the swearing and whatnot when he hit the ball. Did you catch it on Saturday when he swore, hit the ball, and then CBS replayed the F word twice? They replayed it.
Yes.
And the F word was still in there.
Was it the F word or was it?
Yeah,
I just saw it was
the F word.
Okay,
yeah.
Now I
heard it and couldn't believe it. I heard
it
live. I'm like, what'd you do that for? Then they come back in like three more holes, four more, and say, by the way, if you heard
right.
the obscenities that we would want to apologize at this moment.
Why would you replay that? Right. God, it's just broadcasting 101. But were you licking the TV like Jim Nantz seemed to be doing about Jordan Spieth? I get the fact that he was unbelievable. Had a great round and was historic, watching one of the greatest games in American history. But come on, man.
Yeah, I just think Americans, they want it so bad. They wanted an American hero so bad, and you know. And I don't believe I don't distinguish between. Obviously, Phil Mickelson is an American golfing hero, and they were pulling for him big time. But
and he has a nice rack.
Yeah,
I'd say he does.
We call him Moobs
around man's
here.
He needs a bro. Little Seinfeld thing there. You know, again, I just think he doesn't have to be compared to anybody. Let's just let the kid breathe for a while and enjoy his life. It looks like his girlfriend is fairly hot, if not extremely.
But I was a little disappointed he didn't give her a little bit more love at the end. But maybe he's just so young and doesn't want to do that in front of his parents. Because remember, when you guys were young, you didn't want to show too much affection. But
I mean, he just didn't want to be known as being that guy.
Yeah. Right. No.
Whipped.
No.
Yeah, whipped. And, he just got done with prom anyway, so he doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah, he just set so many records, too. You know, he kind of, to tie Tiger, and then he had the 36-hole all-time record. He had the 54-hole all-time record, second youngest ever. I mean, just so
he got
many.
Got all the birdies, the most birdies,
most
too.
Birdies. He blew that away.
He did, didn't he?
I think he had 29, and I think the record was 25. And
Mickelson, I believe. Not many people realize this, but the last, actually the first nine, he had a lot of bogeys involved there, and he still maintained and hung on. So I think another one of the great parts of his game is just that ability to hang on and deal with pressure. And on Sunday.
Yeah, Mike, every time there seemed to be that the door might be a little bit open for Justin Rose or Phil Mickelson or Rory or whoever, he kind of closed it. He came back, and I think mentally he's incredibly strong.
He is.
I think to ask about his swing, you know, as a golf professional who does this for a living, you know, I see some flaws in, believe it or not, in Jordan's swing, but, you know, the mind can overcome those things. I think when you're that strong mentally and you're that competitive and you know, gosh, I mean, how do you, the thing with, you know, he played at Texas, you know, and 1 year, he was kind of a one and done. They even compared that to college basketball, by the way, at one point. But I think these kids are, they're not as nervous anymore when they tee it up the first time, you know, or this is the second Masters.
But why do you think that is? Because
I just think
they grow
the
up
college,
in it?
The high school, they're playing in World Juniors and U.S. Juniors. And, I mean, the top ones are, and like Jordan did. Jordan won the U.S. Junior twice, and I think Tiger's the only one to win it three times. So, I mean, he's been under, you know, a little anxiety or just put the pressure on you. Not nothing to this stage, obviously, but, you know, you grow up just letting the anxiety and the pressure just build a little bit, and pretty soon, by the time you get to the big stage, you're used to it.
But in Texas, too, I'm sorry, in Texas also, it's always really windy. It's known for being a windy golf course, and you have to play a different shot and hitting it a little flatter, a little different angle coming in on some shots. And being from Texas, having played there, you know, in college for that 1 year, I think that that teaches a kid a lot, too, about what to do when that weather is not exactly ideal.
Yeah, I mean, the weather was good, but, yeah, you're right, Mike. The you know, I mean, that's why you see the all these Texans, Ben Hogan and Byron Nelson, obviously, more recently.
Was Trevino from Texas?
Trevino's from Texas originally and then kind of New Mexico. Yeah, he's from Texas, El Paso, yeah. So, yeah, a lot of great, great win players and great players come out of Texas, obviously. So
talking to Greg Scholes, the PGA Master of Instruction and also co-host of Teed Up Golf here on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket. Obviously as good as Jordan and Justin played yesterday, as long as Tiger's playing, he's always going to be the story. And I know we kind of talked about that at the beginning of the segment here. Were you surprised at how he played yesterday coming off of when he walked off in Phoenix? And he was still playing on Sunday. It was a pretty good sign. I wasn't expecting that from Tiger.
Yeah, I think that was kind of the basic thoughts that if he made the cut, I think making the cut is what, quote, the experts thought would have been a good tournament. I'm sure if you asked Tiger, would that be? No. Sure. I mean, Tiger said, I'm here to win. He would have walked, you know, that's the mindset. And that's a great mindset. It wasn't going to happen. But, I mean, I was surprised. His middle two rounds were very, very good. He started with 73. Tiger, again, ended with 73. But the middle two rounds were good. And I would bet 90% of the golfers out there, even the tour players, were more surprised. And I don't think they expect him to come back to some degree. I don't
know.
To
win?
I think he'll win a regular tour event. I don't, or if he plays in many. Masters?
Any of the Grand Slam events?
The majors, you mean?
Majors, yeah. Majors.
I'll give him one more just because I think miracles can happen, you know, but yeah. To get from, he's at 14, Nicklaus is at 18, that whole debate, is he ever going to, for a while, it was, of course he's going to make it, and now it's like, he's not going to, it would be, that would be a miracle. One more, I'll give him a British where you can bomb it off the tee and let it roll on that hard, you know, I'll give him a British maybe, more than any other.
Certainly
right
knows that course. He knows the Masters. That's why I think I bought into it more, because he knows that course and just won there, had so many great memories there that some of that may have come back to him. Some of that memory and that mindset and that positive the stuff that used to flow through his veins the entire time when he was winning those four that he did win.
Right.
I kind of see him sort of visualizing each shot, knowing how to play it. But and it was in the conditions of the course too. I thought he might put a decent score on the card. But another thing I wanted to mention, going back to Spieth, just real quickly, the gutsiest thing I think I've seen in golf in a long time. Was it 13 or 14 where he takes out the 5 wood? He was like 242 out, and instead they all thought, everyone thought he was going to lay up.
He was laying up,
And he fired at the pin.
Yeah, he just cleared it. He was yelling at the ball that time to get going. You know, obviously you can't influence the ball with your voice. You know, I don't know if anyone
people
knows that.
People try, though. I mean, we all try.
You got to try. Yeah.
You can't stop it from going out of bounds once it's on its way. So, and it just cleared, yeah.
Yeah, it did.
Just cleared the pond there on 15. Pretty sure it was 15 by a few feet, and he was sweating that one out. Yeah, that could have been the difference.
That was huge, I thought, and I think only a four shot lead at the time over Justin Rose. Greg Scholes, thank you so much for being on with us.
Thank you, guys.
You got to come on with us again. This is fun.
And let me know when I can get a couple more instructions down the street from my house. I'll just walk up and...
You get it. I'm at the University of Minnesota, the Les Bolstead Golf Course.
And how do people get a hold of you? Just go to the website or Twitter?
Yeah, I have a website, gregscholesgolflessons.com, and the U of M website. You can Google it and find me.
Cool.
You pop bones back in as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
right,
okay. Yeah,
right,
I'm a chiropractor on the side.
That's good. Thank you, Greg. That's a good one. We'll be talking about that one for a while. I can't lay off Tiger for that one. Next up, 4.5 questions at 4:30. We got the 4 questions and a halfie, a little word association, and we'll do that next.
With the opportunity of coming in here, helping young guys in this transition of being better and bettering this team for the city, I saw this as a great opportunity for me. So I'm just happy to be here. I figure if LeBron can go home, then why can't I?
KG.
He's the guy that threw out the first pitch today during the home opener. So it's baseball.
Did he get it there?
Baseball didn't get any good to me. Yeah, he did. He got it there. In fact, Torrey Hunter, after the first pitch, said, I'm so glad, because they're friends. He said, I'm so glad he didn't pull a 50 cent on me. Remember when 50 cent, was that last year or 2 years ago?
I think it was last year.
In the New York Mets, where he threw it basically to first base.
You want
to
call it a throw? You're going to call it a throw.
Well, whatever it was. Somehow the ball got out of his hand and wound up nowhere near home plate.
I know that the catcher was not really catching. He was chasing the baseball. I've never seen anything worse. And I've seen several women celebrities who had the first pitch out that have done much, much, much better, including Mariah Carey and They got it there at least.
No, they introduced Kevin Garnett. He walked out with Coco and Cream, or what are his kids' names?
I don't even really know.
Caprese and Mozzarella. No. It's two like Italian type dessert type names. Coco and something else. I can't remember.
I didn't know that.
And his beautiful wife walked out to the mound. He got on the mound, and then he's like, "I need a baseball." So then, guess who comes walking out with the baseball? None other than Tyus Jones.
That's sick.
Yeah.
That is just sick. God, that's pretty good stuff right there.
Great stuff.
Tyus Jones.
4.5 questions. Question number one, according to Mark Steen of SportsCenter, he tweeted out this morning that there's no definitive word yet, but that KG is leaning towards coming back to the Wolves next year. He's 21st in the league. KG's only played 5 games since being traded back home from Brooklyn, but his leadership on and off the court for the young Wolves obviously can't be measured. The report is nice and all, but isn't this a given, especially with him barely playing since being traded? There's no way someone with KG's competitiveness would come back to pomp and circumstance like he had and then not play while ending his career. It just makes no sense to me. So KG, by the way, along with Tyus Jones, like I just said, throughout that first pitch, home opener, KG's coming back next year. Does that surprise you?
No. I mean, no, I was assuming it.
Yeah, I don't understand
I was assuming,
why.
But I guess you
why
have to make it official. I guess it's...
It's not official. But he said word coming out of the Timberwolves is that he's coming back.
You will sooner or later have to make it official, I would say then. But right now, I'm not surprised by what this much talk is. Not at all.
There's no way he's gonna be traded back to the Timberwolves, play a couple of games, and then sit, I think it's like 16 in a row now, to wrap up his career.
Like you said also, midseason with the Nets, and to come out... Whatever, 3/4 of the way through the season, and to come in. No, he's not the kind of guy that breaks a contract with somebody and comes in for no reason other than to play another halfie and show people how to play basketball. No. Of course, there's an awful lot more in it for him than just playing here for another couple of years. We all kind of think and speculate that maybe he might have a chance to own this team with another group
for sure
someday soon. So that's why he wanted to land here.
It's official. The Wild are in the playoffs, and they will play the St. Louis Blues during the first round of Lord Stanley's playoffs. They've had 10-1 odds now at winning the whole shebang, while our favorite website, Bleacher Report, predicts the Wild will beat the Blues in 7 games. The Wild beat the Blues in St. Louis this year for the first time since 2007, having a 2-1-1 matchup advantage this year. We've talked about who we'd like the Wild to play in the first round, and we've all agreed that it isn't the Anaheim Ducks. What are the keys for success that you see it for the Wild to overcome this matchup with the Blues?
You know what? I like the fact that we are pretty good on our skates, and I think speed kills. I just think that, you know, skating around people and having your way with the puck instead of putting up with all the bumps and bruises, and they're going to take those anyway because that's their style. Mm. But I wonder if you can't counter that with just speed, and like as you guys are trying to line up on us and trying to bully us up against the boards, we're going to go past you and put the puck in the net. I kind of like an attack mode where we're better on our skates than they are on theirs. I think it'll be very physical. I think it'll be 7 games. And I like our chances to win that series. I really do.
How many home games do we lose? How many road games do we win?
I only go by the way they play when I see them and when they match up. I can go by how I feel that way. I like the first one out of the chute, and they would be at their place, right? Mm-hmm. And I like the first one out of the chute just to show them that they're pretty good on the road, and that what happened before this season wasn't just an accident to beat them in St. Louis. And there's more of that. I see them really geared up for that.
It takes away home court or home ice advantage right off the bat by taking that first game.
Yep.
Thursday night, Saturday, then back here at the XL Energy Center Monday and Wednesday. You and I will be down at Tom Reed's for those home Wild playoff hockey games. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Speed does kill, and the inconsistency of their goalies. But I think the only problem several problems that the Minnesota Wild have had, but the biggest one is at times not being able to score. Sometimes they just erupt with goals, and they'll beat a team 7-2 or something like that. But then oftentimes, obviously we know what the Dubinator can do in defending the pipes, but scoring sometimes is a pain in the butt for the Minnesota Wild, and let's just hope a drought isn't coming here this week.
It'd be the wrong time, but I mean, as long as you get that kind of guy in front of the net, you have to like your chances to stay close and give yourselves at least a chance to put that speed to work. I would say just keep those lines fresh and keep rotating speed in on the bullies.
Yeah,
that's how I see it,
because they're pretty much healthy now, and so you can throw guys out there, and Matt Cook can go out and pound somebody in the face. Chris Stewart can do the same thing.
Zucker there on standby for
so
a little extra scoring
fast. My God. Question 3, the Twins home opener, one of my favorite days of the year, right up there with the NFL draft, opening weekend of the NCAA tournament, the Super Bowl for me anyway. Today also marks the first Target Field sellout in 110 games. since August of 2013, meaning last year's home opener didn't even sell out, nor did a single game all year last year. Going into the season, the Twins had a lot of promise, but what a difference a week and a half makes. Obviously, the 1-5 record, the demise of Ricky Nolasco and Irvin Santana. Are fans going to today's game because of the excitement around the team coming out of spring training? Maybe they bought their tickets a couple of weeks ago. Or are Minnesotans just excited for the chance to bask in the sunshine while drinking beers and eating hot dogs outside?
Yeah, that one. That one, I definitely don't think that there's too much to be excited about with this team. Coming out of spring training, I don't think so. I think there's new food, there's new menu out there. It's a beautiful ballpark. There is new faces to go watch and get an idea of what. But opening day, it's just the nostalgia of going to opening day. It's a beautiful day outside. The weather turned out to be great. Mm-hmm. That's why they're there.
They had breakfast out in the plaza earlier this morning. It's been an all-day festivities, which is fantastic.
That's why they went.
You and I will be down there on Friday, broadcasting from our new Friday location for Twins Homes Games, the office on Washington, right next to J.D. Hoyt's and Deja Vu, right in the middle, right sandwiched in between.
We are heading to the office. We'll be at the office all day.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's we'll be because we work.
And then after work, come stay late at the office. Just tell your wife or husband or boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. You got to stay late at the office. You're doing some extra time at the office and come down and say hi to the superstar and I will.
Time and a half.
Yeah. Question four, Bleacher Report has given the Vikings a C-plus offseason grade so far, saying the offseason will likely be judged on whether Adrian Peterson is on the roster come week one of the regular season. The Vikings obviously signed Sean Hill, cornerback Terrence Newman, safety Taylor Mays, and linebacker Casey Matthews. Vikings also traded a fifth rounder for wide receiver Mike Wallace. While none of these moves are really that sexy, they should provide depth, veteran leadership, maybe some pop in the offense with Mike Wallace. What grade would you give the Vikings so far this offseason?
That's not the impressive part of what I think they've done. I would give them a B- based on the people they went back and re-signed. Tom Johnson's and those kinds of guys, the core players.
Joe Berger.
Berger. That's the kind of stuff that I'm talking about. They did the right thing there, too. Bringing those new guys in, those were all pretty good. I don't understand Casey Matthews, really. I don't get that one that much. It doesn't much matter to me. That's a special team player glorified by the name itself. The court is out. The jury is out on Mike Wallace. You know, that could be a good one. That could be really good. But what really they're going to be graded upon, for me at least, is the draft. And that's where this team will either get better really quick and have a shot at doing some really special things, or it won't. But we need a left guard so bad we can taste it.
No, I feel like there are so many positions that the Vikings need so badly. I think a C-plus, in my opinion, is a little high. I would maybe give them a D-plus. Because of these moves, I mean, Terrence Matthews, 36, 37, cornerback. You don't know how long he's going to play. Taylor Mays, safety, started three games in his 3 or 4 year professional career so far. Whether he's going to play linebacker or safety, still that huge hole in guard. What's going on with Adrian Peterson? What I do like with the Minnesota Vikings is their young players continue to age and continue to grow with the veteran leadership of Mike Zimmer and some of the other players that they're bringing in. But Teddy Bridgewater, obviously, Charles Johnson. Jarius Wright, hopefully Cordarrelle Patterson turns into something. Anthony Barr, like you said, Tom Johnson and Joe Berger being re-signed were huge.
Greenway. Redone. Yeah. I think that's all good. Those are the kind of things that mean the team really does care and understand what's going on and how to keep things together. You got to keep it glued together. And then bring in that new talent. That new pool of young talent needs to grow with this draft. I'm not worried about so much, you know, the veteran free agent signings. I know that anyone that comes in on the defensive side of the ball is a free agent. If Zimmer okays it, I'm good. If he has a reason for either of those, a Newman being here or a Taylor Mays being here, then that's good enough with me.
Yeah, but he also brought in Chris Crocker last year who didn't make it out of training camp.
That was a flyer. Hey, so if he still had something left in him, that's fine. But
are they taking flyers on the rest of these guys then, though, is basically what I'm worried about.
No, I know. But I knew what that was. I think we all did. I mean, we knew how old he was, and we knew that he understood what the circumstances were himself, Crockett, by being here, is that Zimmer was going to give him a chance to be that guy in the locker room, in the meeting rooms, on the field for a while, and he just didn't have it. I think the guy just fell apart in training camp, and Zimmer and he had to just sort of shake hands and walk away from it. They just wasn't there. He gave him a chance, though. He must have really liked it. I know he liked it.
Yeah, I like the veteran backups and veteran leadership that they brought in, but there's still, I mean, a middle linebacker. What's going to happen there?
We got a ways to go.
We could use a starting safety. I know you like Blanton. I know there's Sendejo back there. Anton Exum is okay.
I like those guys. They're not...
Yeah.
Blanton, I wonder what one more year will do for Blanton in this defense with this same coach and Edwards as the defensive coordinator. That's Zimmer's kid in this defensive secondary, I believe.
Yeah.
I think he's the secondary coach. I like that.
No, he's not the secondary coach.
Is he linebackers?
Linebacker, I think. Secondary coach is the old defensive coordinator from the Buffalo Bills, and I cannot for the life of me remember his name. Gray, maybe? Gray.
Hmm.
I don't remember.
We'll check on that. But I do like this defense.
Yeah,
the direction they were going at the end of the year, even during the middle of the year, to keep this team that was offensively, I think, decimated with the loss of the big-time running back and, of course, Kyle Rudolph, and a left guard. Well, actually, a right guard.
Who would you say was the best off-season free agent signing for the Minnesota Vikings?
Sean Hill.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, Sean Hill. I
took
like
you a while to think of who.
Yeah, well, if you take a look at the veteran free agents that we had to re-sign, I don't count the ones that we were trying to bring back to our roster, from our roster.
I agree.
But the new guys in, I would say Sean Hill.
So I'm of not super-duper advanced age. I still have friends and family members and whatnot that go out and about and do the nightlife thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to say it was Sunday morning. I get a report that Adrian Peterson was out on the town.
Here?
In Minneapolis. Fauché.
With his wife?
No.
He's by himself.
He was with a friend.
Well, that's okay.
And he ended
up... What was his name? Do they know the friend's name?
Andrew? I don't know. They said it wasn't Andrew Sandejo. That's the only Andrew that I knew on the Minnesota Vikings.
Okay.
Not acting like he was married by any means, and ended up taking a few girls home with him. What would you say?
I think so. That was Saturday night.
Yeah.
Well, that's I didn't know he was in town. Maybe he's in town. Maybe they're talking. Who knows? I guess we shouldn't be alarmed by it.